Outdoor Pursuits with yours truly, Jade Quinn McDonald. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting from the traditional unceded Coast Salish territory of the Halkomelem-speaking Musqueam people here from UBC campus in West Point Grey. On the pilot show today, we've got Chris Rasmussen, pro snowboarder, grew up in Vancouver. He's going to tell us about his career. He's going to get into competitions. He's a movie maker, so we'll talk about film production, talk about sponsorships, talk about all that jazz. So tune in. Here we go.
People might know my name from snowboarding. I'm a professional snowboarder. And I guess you could say my discipline is backcountry freestyle. I make my career out of going into the mountains, into the backcountry with a small crew of people and documenting the snowboarding that we're doing.
Awesomeness. Awesome. What's the difference between being regular staple pro and backcountry?
I would say there's when you start deciding as a young snowboarder that you want to pursue the professional career of it, there's kind of two different routes you can go. And one of them is a little less obvious and doesn't really seem to have like a play-by-play rule book or like a, I don't know, algorithm isn't the right word. There's no instructions on how to do it. And that is the backcountry discipline.
Which is more exciting for a lot of us.
Yeah, totally. Well, not some people less so, but anybody that tries it, I would say it's more exciting. But and then the other option you can go is park, slopestyle contest or half-pipe contest. At a young age, I was pretty shied away from that. I was more drawn to the creativity of backcountry snowboarding, so I tried to figure out a way to carve my path doing that.
And
went that direction.
Yes, I know backcountry, a lot of what is associated with that is going uphill. So you guys snowmobile, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. That would be, I'd say, the main way that we get out there is...
Do you ever strap skins on?
Or is it... I have. And I like split boarding for the zen part of it, but in terms of productivity...
The novelty.
It's the novelty, exactly. I like split boarding when I want to go for a hike.
Going for a
snowmobiles have become like... Man, I mean, I've been sledding for like 15, 16 years and the machines just keep getting better. And when you have a tight crew that is safe and good at navigating the mountains together and everyone's really competent on those machines, nothing could touch them. I would argue it's almost as good as helling. Like, it's pretty special.
Yeah. So you won a snowmobile a few years ago. Is that right?
I did.
Yeah. What competition was that?
So there is this new contest that backcountry professional snowboarder Travis Rice started and is throwing called Natural Selection. And it's basically it got created because my type of snowboarding, there was no competitive format to broadcast the type of snowboarding that we do. So if you didn't follow the core of snowboarding, you wouldn't really see what people like us did. So he wanted to bring backcountry freestyle snowboarding away from strictly video parts and movies and bring it into the public's eye. So we started this contest called Natural Selection, and in 2021, I won the Canadian Baldface event for it, and the prize was a brand new Polaris snowmobile.
So. Incredible. So changing track a little bit, bringing it back to Travis. He, from what I understand, was pretty inspirational for your career. So who is Travis?
So Travis Rice is, I would argue, probably one of the most famous snowboarders of our time. More of the masses that don't follow snowboarding would probably know a name like Sean White or Mark McMorris over Travis, but I think Travis has done, I don't think anybody can touch how much he's done in terms of his career and the tricks he's done, the lines he's rode. He's basically one of the best snowboarders to ever have lived. And yeah, super driven and inspiring person, and his video parts from that I would watch from an early age, like, kind of oozed that part of the personality and characteristic that so many people today look up to. So very early on, before I had met him, I became a huge fan of his snowboarding and tried to like emulate a lot of the stuff he did. And yeah, fast forward to now, I've been on a couple of film projects with him. We share some of the same sponsors. Like, I would consider him a good friend, and he's just kind of become like a mentor, kind of awesome. role model for me in a lot of ways.
So I assume he invited you to be on the natural selection competition.
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a board. They have a board of to make sure that there's no bias mm-hmm. in the invite list.
Yes, they have
a board of people. So it wasn't just because we're friends.
Mm, totally.
He had to run it by the whole board, and mm-hmm. the whole board had to agree that I was a good choice to be on the tour.
Awesome.
But, yeah.
Little did they know. Yeah. He'd sweep it all. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about, maybe the winning line you took?
So the event that I won, the Natural Selection Bald-Faced Valhalla event in 2021 was a little bit different than the live one that was at Jackson Hole before that. Uh-huh. The Bald-Faced Valhalla one is in Nelson.
Nelson, yeah. BC.
Nelson, BC.
Gotcha.
So last year for 2021, or 2 years ago, mm-hmm. it was Jackson Hole. That was the live one that you would have seen on TV.
Yeah.
Bald-Faced Valhalla and Nelson. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was Alaska.
Okay.
So I did all three events last year. But yeah, the AK one. So I just come off the Jackson Hole event and did good, but didn't do as well as I wish. And I had never done contests really. Like I skipped the whole contest thing and went straight to filming. So even understanding how a judge interprets your riding and puts a score to it was very strange for me. Usually it's all a matter of expression and nobody can really put a score to what you're doing. It either looks good or it doesn't. So I started to realize how the points system worked. So I went into the Canadian event at Baldface Valhalla a little bit more ready, realizing that I had to link multiple tricks in the same run and I had to change spin directions and grabs. So when we got there and we kind of eyed up the terrain, I just got my eyes on the first thing that I could see that was going to give me some airtime mm-hmm. to enter the line.
Yeah.
And I found a perfect kind of cornice thing that you could pat down a little takeoff on. And I was like, I'm going to spin into the chute. As soon as I get out of the chute, I'm going to do a hand drag on that pillow. Then I'm going to make my way through this run and just do 360s and 180s the whole way down.
Yeah.
And just make sure I'm changing up grabs.
So this is a backcountry snowboard event.
Exactly.
Do you get to ride your line?
No.
Okay. So you just look.
You have to just look. You don't get... That's the interesting thing about this contest is there's no practicing on the field. It's a backcountry snowboard event, so it has to stay as powder. So you don't get to touch the course.
Don't touch the powder.
Look, but don't touch. So you get photos. There's a drone pilot there, an FPV drone pilot who flies the runs.
FPV.
PV, that's what it's called, I think. So it's the drones that where they wear the goggles.
Oh,
the first
cool.
person view goggles. And they fly them.
First person view.
Yeah. So he'll fly with the GoPro on his drone all of the runs and show them to the riders so we can kind of visualize what it's going to be
like. Do you guys put the goggles on?
No, he just sends them airdrops them to our phone. And so that's all you get to do. You just get to see photos of the terrain.
That's kind of
watch this.
Intense.
It is, because when you're doing it for the first time, you're I don't know the speed for this. I watching it on a little iPhone screen or even your computer, it's hard to have depth perception of how far is this tree from this tree? If I want to jump from here and hit that landing, is that 20 feet or is that 60 feet? So all those things kind of come into play, and that's where experience kicks in. That's where I think I won that event because I had a good grasp on how the judging worked. And then I have experience to maybe not have the gnarliest bag of tricks, but I have experience to make something work that I've never hit before, to get down it fluidly and be I can.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Is it invitational to Alaska, or does everyone head?
Invitational.
Okay.
And so the way to qualify through is you have to keep doing really well in all the events, because they narrow down the field as they go. So it's 24 riders, gets cut down to 16 riders, and then gets cut down to 8 riders.
Ooh.
So...
Okay.
Yeah.
That must be quite the final.
Yeah, yeah. The Alaska final in 2021 was so intense. I didn't do as well as I would have wanted, but I am happy to have put a couple runs down on some of the most incredible and frightening terrain ever. Longest runs in my life. And the face that we had to do the finals in, I put it on my Instagram, actually. I'll show it to you later. But
shout out your Instagram for us.
Yeah, it's just at Chris Rasman, CHRISRASMAN. Pretty easy to find. But yeah, it's this run that we were holding the finals venue on in AK was morning light only. So they had to have all of the runs done by 12:30, because then the shade came, I think maybe even early. I think it was 11:30. So I ended like ended up having to go first on this finals day. So I was the first drop on this untouched run. And I think the drop time was like 6:40 in the morning. So we're like in the helicopters flying out of the lodge at 5:45 in the morning, get to the top of this peak. It's dark. They're setting up all the gear and the tents at the bottom and the like finish gate and everything. And the cameramen are getting ready. It's like dark and the sun's just rising. And then it's like, okay, like we're going to be dropping Rasmin in 20 minutes. It was so epic. I'll see if I can find photo of it real quick, but
so it's
but yeah, it was pretty wild.
Eight of you guys, you dropped first. You all drop in the same area?
No, you get to pick. So it's this ridge line, and then they have like a boundary. They'll be like, you can't go farther than this line or farther than this line, but all of these spines are fair game, and you can drop wherever you want. But you drop one at a time. So for instance, I four ran the course. I drop, my run gets scored. I wait at the bottom. Then my head-to-head person, which was Mark McMorris on that day, he goes, then his run gets scored.
So these are all filmed, is that correct?
Yeah, they're all filmed.
Yeah. Do you, obviously, you, part of your shtick is being in the backcountry and making movies. Do you feel like getting filmed might have thrown other people off that aren't used to being in movies, or all these riders used to the camera and
I think these days if you're a snowboarder getting any type of like budget or money or sponsors, I think especially with just how the world's gone with everybody filming stuff on their phones, I think you're pretty used to being like not camera shy. I think if you're in any sort of spotlight in snowboarding, you're comfortable around the camera these days. So especially everyone at this contest, like everyone there, whether their background was slopestyle or pipe, they're comfortable in front of cameras. They're comfortable having their snowboarding documented. And then all of the guys like me there, the video part people, same thing. You're used to seeing yourself on film.
Yeah, totally. So you have a group that you ride with, right? How many? Seven?
There's six or seven of us. Okay. Yeah, seven.
Awesome. Yeah. And you are called?
Called the Man Boys.
Lovely. Yes.
Yeah, we started that group. Basically in 2014, there was this change of the tides happening in the snowboard film industry world, where like production companies, it was kind of at the beginning of YouTube web series starting to be popular. So like it was happening in skiing, it was happening in mountain biking, it was happening in snowboarding. A lot of athletes and companies weren't doing full length movies on DVD anymore. It was just YouTube web series.
No DVD.
I know, I missed the age of DVDs. No DVD. We have a DVD player anymore. Exactly. And so what was happening with that is these production companies were losing money and funding from sponsors. So a lot of them were kind of going out of business and pulling the plug on making films. And so me and this group of friends were just kind of like, why do we have to rely on a production company to tell us where to film, what to do, and then what the movie's going to be made, why we can just skip that middleman and make our own production company.
Be a democracy.
Exactly.
For goodness sake.
So we just decided to start our own thing. And the Man Boys name has some layers to why we called it that. But I think the simplest thing is it's just funny. We're a bunch of grown ass men still doing a boy's job, you know?
Yeah.
So it's the Man Boys.
That's sweet. Do you find because you have experience with production companies as well, do you find without production companies it's easier to kind of lose motivation to keep producing content, or is it nicer, you're like more willing to give more time because it's friends? Or
that's a good question. I mean, shoot, it's hard to totally answer that because it's been so many years now. You know, this is like our eighth year of doing the Man Boys. So it's been so many years now of not having a production company controlling it. So I've evolved as a person as well. My snowboarding and my outlook on it has evolved. So I don't know what it would look like for me if I got thrown into a big production company. But what I will say is there's positives and negatives to both. A production company does keep you motivated, because usually if you're filming for a production company's movie, it means your sponsors have given more money for you to be in there, because there's more costs for the, you know, the production company needs to make money. They need to license music. They need to pay their crew of filmers. And so there can be a bit more pressure there of like making sure you're getting out there.
Yeah.
And then the production company, and this can be a positive or a negative depending on your your mood or how you want to look at it, but they'll generally tell the crews where they want you to go.
Right.
It's like, hey, it's good in Europe. You guys need to get to Europe right now.
Like, oh,
it's good in Japan. Twist my arm. There right now. Yeah.
All right.
And so that can be really fun. But then the nice part about being just like our own company is no one's telling us where to go. No one's telling us what to do.
Yeah.
So it's harder in some ways because we have to be creative and keep an eye on the conditions around the world and decide where to go and what's the best call. But then it's also kind of nice because you're free. You have nobody being like, hey, you guys need to be here. Sometimes we just want to stay home.
Yeah, everyone's needs, totally.
Yeah.
And I remember I went to a showing at the Mori Young Art Center.
Yeah, so that was our first full-length movie.
Cool.
Before that, done just web series and short film edits, and that was our first, like, you know, sold on iTunes.
Yeah,
like, proper
awesome.
Movie. Which was fun and a learning experience.
What I do remember from that one is there were huge backcountry lines, but there was also some urban boarding. Mm-hmm. So is your team a mix of urban, slope-style backcountry, or is it mostly backcountry riders?
Our crew is definitely mostly backcountry riders, but sometimes we'll like kind of cross-pollinate and work with different riders, and it's just fun. We have a lot of friends in the community. It's nice to switch it up and not be clicky and stick to our own crew. So when we did the Man Boys movie, we brought on Craig McMorris, who's insanely good at urban riding. We brought on this French rider named Anto Chamberlain, who incredible rail rider. And at that time, the 2015 or 2016 season, Jody Wachniak, who's like one of our main guys, was still doing both. So he was still doing urban in like November, December, and then half of January. Mm-hmm. And then halfway through January, he'd switch to backcountry.
Nice.
These days, most of the crew is pretty strictly backcountry.
Nice.
The streets are, I was gonna ask. So I can't really speak for it as much, but just from what I hear, it's just like takes a toll on your body. And
I bet it's like skateboarding. You're just getting
totally
like
smashing hitting, off
you're still hitting the pavement.
Yeah.
Oh,
and they clean the snow off the stairs to make it look cooler. So they'll go to a spot where the stairs are covered in snow.
Clacking.
Exactly. Oh. Shovel off all the stairs.
Awesome.
So it's pure concrete.
That's fantastic. I usually move the powder away too. I want people to see the
see the hazards.
The cracking under there.
Give yourself a base grind on the stairs.
I love it. So you brought on Craig McMorris?
Yeah.
Is he part of your group, or is he just...
He's one of the homies. He's always... Craig's a pretty big name rider, so he's always had like the kind of resources and skills to do his own thing. When I say we brought him on, I just more meant that it was more like, because he's been a friend of ours forever, it was more like, hey, Craig, we're making a movie as the Man Boys, like, we're going to expand and get more riders into it and hire a secondary filmer. Like, do you want to film for our movie? And he was on board with that. And, and it's been fun working with Craig over the years too, because he always has his thing going on years where we'll make like little shorter projects. Maybe he'll also make his own movie. Mm-hmm. So then it's kind of cool because we get these two different sets of eyes on our content. We'll have footage in his movie. He'll have footage in our movie.
Cool.
And gets a lot more views, which is nice.
That's sweet. Cross-pollination, as you said earlier.
Exactly.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So if you're making a decision for a movie, are you guys all involved in the creative process?
I see. That's a good question. Definitely not. No.
Okay.
There are, I would say... Rusty Ockenden, who was a pro snowboarder for most of the Man Boys years, but now has since switched to full-time filmer, so he's not a snowboarder anymore. He has always been the driving force behind the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
He has done most of the work in terms of music selection, overall editing, and just kind of, you know, name of the movie and just overall vibe. Most of the credit goes to him. And then for the other guys, myself included, there's like different tiers of interest. So I've always been really interested in the creative process. So when Rusty starts that, I get involved as much as I can, and he'll show me different sections of the edit along the way, and I'll give him feedback.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jody's kind of like that too. And then as we drift into some of the other guys just aren't as interested.
Yeah, totally.
So like Matt, for instance, I think we'll like barely see the project till the final cut.
And just be like, sick.
He's like, great, good job.
Love
he just
it.
Cares a little less about that whole process. But yeah, I'd say we all have like a little bit to do with it, some of us more than others.
Yeah. Now we're gonna take a little intermission and listen to one of Chris's favorite songs. It's called Mariella by Kruang Bin and Leon Bridges. This is off the Texas Moon EP from last year.
And yeah, Chris says that this is one of his favorites right now because no matter what he's doing, when it comes on, it puts him in a mellow mood. And you gotta be mellow when you're hucking stuff as big as Chris does. So yeah, give it a listen.
Yeah.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Outdoor Pursuits Show with Jade Quinn McDonald on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional unceded territory of the Musqueam people. Before we chat to Chris about his sponsorships, I'm going to play you a little sponsorship of our own, followed by a PSA and a show promo.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or grocery checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek coffee today. CITR is powered by Guayaquil Yerba Mate. Yerba Mate is a naturally caffeinated drink that comes in a variety of formats, from loose leaf to cans to bottles. Yes, the yellow ones. Guayaquil Mate is all organic, non-GMO, and sure to make you come to life. Guayaquil is more than just a Yerba Mate brand. They're focused on personal, social, ecological, and cultural growth through their commitment to regenerative practices, which include stewarding the South Atlantic rainforest and partnering with indigenous South American communities through the production of Yerba Mate. Visit guayaquil.com. GUAYAKI.com to learn more and find this delicious drink near you. Or stop by CITR station on UBC campus for a free yerba mate can.
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19 inspired changes, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
Pontius Pilate. He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on Xenia!
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
In case you didn't catch that, that's a promo for Nardwar every Friday at 3:30. Tune in. We're going to get back to chatting with Chris about what it was like growing up in Vancouver, what it's like to have sponsorships that support you and what you're doing, and he's going to tell us a little bit about backcountry in the Pemberton area, some cautions, some recommendations, some advice, and yeah, we'll keep it going here.
You grew up in Vancouver.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, I grew up in Vancouver, and yeah, my dad was always like surf shred dad, like always took us on surf vacations when he could, was always trying to get us up the mountain to ski, and it was... So I already surfed with him and I skateboarded a little bit, and it was only a matter of time. I just wanted to stand sideways. I was like, he was always snowboarding and I was skiing. So I was like, I want to snowboard like you.
What the heck?
I was such a fan of surfing and surf videos. I actually was more into like surf culture and surf movies like than I was snowboarding for quite some time. So I didn't even know much about the snowboard industry until I was in my later teen years when I was like, like really young Grom, it was just surfing. So I wanted to snowboard because it was like surfing on the snow.
Totally.
And then eventually I kind of got into it and started watching movies myself, mm-hmm. and like realizing this was the world I wanted to be a part of.
Yeah. So, do you think the freedom of being in the water and surfing in the ocean and just being unhindered influenced your choice to be a backcountry pro and kind of leave the slopes and seek out the fresh?
Yeah, that's a super insightful observation, because I've definitely reflected on that before. I think a big part of what drew me into backcountry snowboarding as opposed to being a competition snowboarder and trying to win slope style events is I related it to surfing, and part of why I love surfing so much was like the peacefulness of just sitting out in a surf lineup, you know, no cell phones, no interference. You're just like really connected with your environment, and as cheesy as it sounds, really connected with nature and the energy of the ocean. And I get that same sensation in the backcountry now, in the mountains. Like, you just feel like there's a lot of like invisible power out there, and I don't know, it's nice. So mm-hmm. it's like constantly draws me back
in. But definitely, mother is watching.
Yeah, 100%.
Mother nature.
You feel like that too.
Yeah. So this is gonna be going out to UBC kids. Did you ever spend time on the UBC campus? Just out of curiosity?
No. I have walked around on the campus. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time around the campus, but not as a student.
Yeah. Okay.
I've gone to UBC pool and, mm-hmm. you know, met with those diving boards.
Oh,
the
yeah.
pool's great. 10 meter outside used to mm-hmm. be the scariest thing, but love that. But yeah, I had to make a decision, you know, full honesty about how my path went is, mm-hmm. when I was in like the 10th grade, my parents started going through a separation, and you know, lots of teenagers have that same story. Mm-hmm. They know how that goes. So there's the complications of that and the family dynamic. But I just remember when all of my friends were signing up for universities, I had this moment where I was like, my parents aren't right all the time. They don't have everything figured out. So as sad as the divorce was, there was like a liberating part of it that made me realize I could make my own decisions and carve my own path, and I didn't have to do exactly what they said was the thing to do. And so I think that family thing happening was the reason that I chose not to go to university.
Interesting.
And chose to start snowboarding full time. With that said, I do not think I wouldn't have been able to be the snowboarder I am today with also doing a couple years of university. I think I could have done both, but in the moment that is what felt right, and I just didn't look back.
Yeah, you made it work. So
no UBC for this guy.
And you went to elementary and high school kind of
in Vancouver.
West Vancouver, North Vancouver.
My elementary school was on like Dunbar and like 16th Street. It was just this like tiny little like Catholic elementary school called ICS. And then the high school I went to was on 41st and Granville, but both pretty small schools. But yeah, we just kind of had the Vancouver scene was funny. Like growing mm-hmm. up in Vancouver, everybody knew each other from all the different schools. There was like high school dances.
Oh yeah.
Like, the public school kids are here.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I know you are now in a relationship with a lovely lady, Lucy
Very
Brown.
Lovely lady. Yeah. She's too good for me.
I don't know. You're a catch. Yeah. You guys are well suited. I know that there was an interesting relationship back in the day in Vancouver. Oh, is that right? Maybe a first relationship.
So are you talking about a potential famous person?
Talking about a famous person.
Yeah. So my 7th grade girlfriend, we used to go to the movies together, hold hands, definitely a couple of kisses. Claire Boucher, who today would be more known as Grimes. Elon Musk's ex-girlfriend.
There we go. There it is. I was actually Grimes for Halloween last year.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Did you get the real or the fake tattoos as well?
No, but I was fake pregnant.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was pretty, I was proud.
You're
proud
of that costume. Show me some photos of that later.
Oh, yeah.
That's epic.
Yeah, it was pretty epic. I just wanted to, I saw another ad with your face on it in town. It was a spy.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I got a billboard.
It's
nice.
up on the side of Showcase there.
Awesome.
Yeah, Main Village. I was like, oh, Here's another one.
Need to go get a photo with that thing. Haven't seen that
totally
one yet.
Totally is. All over. A bunch on the island. Brightens my day. I'm like, yeah, Chris.
I know that guy.
Nice. Yeah.
Hopefully a good photo.
Yeah, it looks great. Always. Yeah, they seem to really know how to do it.
Yeah, it's all, like all done in post.
Paid or something. Yeah. Sponsorships are pretty cool.
Yeah,
for sure. I heard that you have your own snowboard, right? With LibTech?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I mean, it means that having your own snowboard, your own pro model is what they call it.
Yeah.
It means that that sponsor believes in you enough to let you design the artwork and the construction of a snowboard that they're going to stamp their brand's name on and sell.
Cool.
So it's a pretty big deal and a pretty humbling and just flattering experience, I guess is the better word for it, because LibTech at a certain point put enough trust in me to be like, your name is valuable enough that we'll attach it to a board that we're putting out, putting the effort into the marketing, and we also trust your art direction and we trust your design.
That's awesome.
So this is the one I'm riding right now is like my fourth pro model, and I have a fifth one coming out next year as well.
Awesome.
Which is pretty exciting, and it's been a super fun process.
So you get into the minutiae, right?
Yeah, like the specs and everything.
Yeah, rocker and totally. Everything. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
I'm pretty, there are some people who are like some other professional snowboarders who are super nerdy about it and get into it down to like a science of like the flex pattern of like how many pounds per square inch is like of pressures in the wood to make it flex, like all this crazy stuff that's beyond me. My comprehension of it is a little simpler. I know what I want my side cut to be. I know like the shape of the nose and tail. I know that I want it to be semi-directional and I want the inserts pulled back a few inches.
Right,
I know
right.
the stiffness I want and I know the camber I want. Yeah. So I tweak all those things. Mm-hmm. And then once it starts to get too technical, I put it in the hands of the mad scientist at LibTech. And I'm like, you guys take it from here because I trust you. But
that's great. Well, congratulations. Fun. That's it.
Thanks.
That's quite the claim.
Yeah. Yeah. The best part about it is seeing people riding it on the hill. Yeah, like today I was up there and I saw three of them. Three random people on it. I was like, huh.
Wow.
So that's always really
cool. They
don't
even know. You're just
wearing all black today.
Boarding by. Chris picked me up from the hill today. We were
taxi service from Lot 8.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, thanks. And we were chatting about now you're in Squamish and the house sound is right there on
right
your
there.
Doorstep.
Steps away.
Yeah. So you foil in the house sound.
Yeah.
Is that the deal?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, first off, foiling is for any listeners that don't know.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
It's a form of wave riding, a form of surfing, and essentially you've probably seen on the internet by now, but basically you have this carbon fiber mast on the bottom of a surfboard type device, and then below that you have a wing that's the shape of an airplane, and it works the same way as an airplane, but instead of in the sky, it works in water. And so essentially the surfboard elevates a couple feet out of the water.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose of even doing that is it allows you to ride very, very small waves with the speed and thrill of riding big waves.
Yeah.
And it allows you to capture the energy of a wave that's almost non-existent. So, you know, I can basically go, I'm doing quotations here, I can basically go surfing in Squamish, which is what makes foiling fun for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Just to kind of close up here, I'm going to bring it back to the snow sports.
Yep.
And I personally, and I'm sure some of the people listening, love going on our own adventures.
Yeah.
Do you have any like special spots that you like to go for? I don't want to
leak any spots,
but I'm always curious. Like
Garibaldi
Park. Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite zones in the area is probably just the Pemberton ice caps. And the sled zone would be called Rutherford. So if you're a new snowmobiler listening, that area is huge. There's so much terrain and the scale is hard to even manage there because there's no trees to kind of give you a grasp of how big everything is. But lots of fun like runs and shuttle runs to do there, even if you're just a recreationalist and you're not trying to be a pro snowboarder. one word of advice I would give to anybody going into the Pemberton Ice Caps is they're ice caps. There's a lot of holes. So go when it's sunny. Know how to navigate glaciers. Make sure you have harnesses and make sure a couple people in the crew know how to use rope and harnesses and all that gear. But
sweet.
Safety
first.
Always safety first.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up. You have any closing comments? You gave us a good recommendation for the Pemberton Ice Caps, but maybe something, there's some aspirational pros out there.
Yeah.
Who knows? Any advice?
I think if I could give any advice to anyone listening to this that has interest in pursuing any type of passion that might be a bit of a stretch from the ordinary, like whether it's a professional athlete, artist, or any type of entrepreneur, I would say just be fully ready for it to be hard. Be fully ready for a lot of people around you to doubt you. And even the people that love you and care about you will sometimes show doubt in those moments because they want you to be successful and they don't want to watch you fail. So just keep on going. Like, it'll be hard. Be ready for it to be hard and just keep on grinding, because one day things, if you put effort into anything, one day they do start working out. You just kind of have to stay at it and not give up.
Yeah. Great advice. Rings true. Yeah. I'm sure it rings true to everyone that hears it. Sometimes it's hard to remember.
Totally.
In the moment.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having
me. High five. Yeah. And I'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Shout out to the lead guitarist of Frank Mona, band On the Come Up. He made that little intro ditty for me, and you can find them on Spotify or Apple Music, wherever you get your tunes.
This winter, Vancouver will enjoy the customary drizzle, fog, and perhaps a modicum of the white stuff. On the other hand, for $195, you can enjoy sunshine of Mexico. Mexico.
Wherever you are, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Vancouver, UBC, on the unceded territory of the Coast Salish, Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Started out as a wave. Someone in the room, someone. disappointed we fated to fall in line. Finally promoted, highly devoted to going in the game with the right words. Diagnosed with a hopeless condition in the psych ward. Those MDs who locked me in an empty room should have known better. In a galaxy of EPMDs and MF Dooms, none glow brighter than Lil Ghost Writer. Hooked on herbaceous substances, growing a book longer than the Cretaceous. These utterances flowing, unctuously posing the sycophants. Psychopompous, these posers claiming they get it. This bizarre poetry starring nobody. This Emily Dickinson knowingly relaying his glittery wisdom. Plastic, plastic, this activism for the limerick. Slippery thick, icicles piercing this inner plenum. Around the heart of this night court, this courtly night, lobbing tennis balls through the menacing halls to the babe's delight. These piglets, depraved as vices vicious, this avarice avaricious. These gold chains, this grill, three coats of paint, and this still radiates his cryptic graffiti. This wall, imploring its interpreter to mediate for this royalty all, divvying up the moieties, his gall, slicing the baby in half in the bath water, enticingly shady. This backpacker at Atwater Station, a father on vacation from the fam, on the lam. This godly glowing verbiage among the foliage, vivid this verdure. Sniffing this air, pure oxygen from the Lil Ghost Writer concert. Tossing and turning in the waterbed awkwardly. You doubt my soldiering forwardly. Room foul from the moldering of old things. You cowards folding as abnormally. I drew towering word things, absurd links.
Hey, this is Noah from Christ on Parade, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Where's Matt?